Chapter 161. Poor broken man, and let his tears flow as they would. He had shed so many tears here long ago that he was less ashamed of his weakness in this place than in any other, perhaps, with that consciousness, had made excuses to himself for coming here. Here, with stooping shoulders, and his chin dropped on his breast, he had come. Here, thrown upon the bare boards, in the dead of night, he wept, alone a proud man, even then, who, if a kind hand could have been stretched out, or a kind face could have looked in, would have risen up, and turned away, and gone down to his cell. When the day broke he was shut up in his rooms again. He had meant to go away today, but clung to this tie in the house as the last, and only thing left to him. He would go tomorrow. Tomorrow came. He would go tomorrow. Every night, within the knowledge of no human creature, he came forth, and wandered through the despoiled house like a ghost. Many a morning when the day broke, his altered face, drooping behind the closed blind in his window, imperfectly transparent to the light as yet, pondered on the loss of his two children. It was one child no more. He reunited them in his thoughts, and they were never asunder. Oh, that he could have united them in his past love, and in death, and that one had not been so much worse than dead. Strong mental agitation and disturbance was no novelty to him, even before his late sufferings. It never is, to obstinate and sullen natures, for they struggle hard to be such. Ground, long undermined, will often fall down in a moment. What was undermined here in so many ways, weakened, and crumbled, little by little, more and more, as the hand moved on the dial. At last he began to think he need not go at all. He might yet give up what his creditors had spared him, that they had not spared him more, was his own act, and only sever the tie between him and the ruined house. By severing that other link, it was then that his footfall was audible in the late housekeeper's room, as he walked to and fro, but not audible in its true meaning, or it would have had an appalling sound. The world was very busy and restless about him. He became aware of that again. It was whispering and babbling. It was never quiet. This, and the intricacy and complication of the footsteps, harassed him to death. Objects began to take a bleared and russet color in his eyes. Dombey and son was no more, his children no more. This must be thought of, well, tomorrow. He thought of it tomorrow, and sitting thinking in his chair, saw in the glass, from time to time, this picture. A spectral, haggard, wasted likeness of himself, brooded and brooded over the empty fireplace. Now it lifted up its head, examining the lines and hollows in its face, now hung it down again, and brooded afresh. Now it rose and walked about, now passed into the next room, and came back with something from the dressing table in its breast. Now, it was looking at the bottom of the door, and thinking. Hush! What? It was thinking that if blood were to trickle that way, and to leak out into the hall, it must be a long time going so far. It would move so stealthily and slowly, creeping on, with here a lazy little pool, and there a start, and then another little pool, that a desperately wounded man could only be discovered through its means, either dead or dying. When it had thought of this a long while, it got up again, and walked to and fro with its hand in its breast. He glanced at it occasionally, very curious to watch its motions, and he marked how wicked and murderous that hand looked. Now it was thinking again. What was it thinking? Whether they would tread in the blood, when it crept so far, and carry it about the house among those many prints of feet, or even out into the street. It sat down, with its eyes upon the empty fireplace, and as it lost itself in thought there shone into the room a gleam of light, a ray of sun. It was quite unmindful, and sat thinking. Suddenly it rose, with a terrible face, and that guilty hand grasping what was in its breast. Then it was arrested by a cry, a wild, loud, piercing, loving, rapturous cry, and he only saw his own reflection in the glass, and at his knees, his daughter. Yes. His daughter. Look at her. Look here. down upon the ground, clinging to him, calling to him, folding her hands, praying to him. Papa, dearest Papa, pardon me, forgive me. I have come back to ask forgiveness on my knees. I never can be happy more without it. Apostrophe unchanged still. Of all the world, unchanged. Raising the same face to his as on that miserable night. Asking his forgiveness. Dear Papa, oh don't look strangely on me. I never meant to leave you. I never thought of it before or afterwards. I was frightened when I went away and could not think. Papa, dear, I am changed. I am penitent. I know my fault. I know my duty better now. Papa, don't cast me off, or I shall die. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he tottered to his chair. He felt her draw his arms about her neck. He felt her put her own round his. He felt her kisses on his face. He felt her wet cheek laid against his own. He felt, oh, how deeply, all that he had done. Upon the breast that he had bruised, against the heart that he had almost broken, she laid his face, now covered with his hands, and said, sobbing, Papa, love, I am a mother. I have a child who will soon call Walter by the name by which I call you. When it was born, and when I knew how much I loved it, I knew what I had done in leaving you. Forgive me, dear Papa, oh say God bless me, and my little child. Apostrophe, he would have said it, if he could. He would have raised his hands, and besought her for pardon, but she caught them in her own, and put them down, hurriedly. My little child was born at sea, Papa, I prayed to God, and so did Walter for me, to spare me, that I might come home. The moment I could land, I came back to you. Never let us be parted any more, Papa. Never let us be parted any more. Apostrophe, apostrophe, his head, now gray, was encircled by her arm, and he groaned to think that never, never, had it rested so before. You will come home with me, Papa, and see my baby. A boy, Papa. His name is Paul. I think I hope he's like apostrophe, her tears stopped her. Dear Papa, for the sake of my child, for the sake of the name we have given him, for my sake, pardon Walter. He is so kind and tender to me. I am so happy with him. It was not his fault that we were married. It was mine. I loved him so much. Apostrophe, she clung closer to him, more endearing and more earnest. He is the darling of my heart. Papa, I would die for him. He will love and honor you as I will. We will teach our little child to love and honor you, and we will tell him, when he can understand, that you had a son of that name once, and that he died, and you were very sorry, but that he is gone to heaven, where we all hope to see him when our time for resting comes. Kiss me, Papa, as a promise that you will be reconciled to Walter, to my dearest husband, to the father of the little child who taught me to come back, Papa, who taught me to come back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as she clung closer to him, in another burst of tears, he kissed her on her lips, and, lifting up his eyes, said, Oh my God, forgive me, for I need it very much. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with that he dropped his head again, lamenting over and caressing her, and there was not a sound in all the house for a long, long time, they remaining clasped in one another's arms, in the glorious sunshine that had crept in with Florence. He dressed himself for going out, with a docile submission to her entreaty, and walking with a feeble gait, and looking back, with a tremble, at the room in which he had been so long shut up, and where he had seen the picture in the glass, passed out with her into the hall. Florence, hardly glancing round her, lest she should remind him freshly of their last parting, for their feet were on the very stones, where he had struck her in his madness, and keeping close to him, with her eyes upon his face, and his arm about her, led him out to a coach that was waiting at the door, and carried him away. Then, Miss Tox and Polly came out of their concealment, and exulted tearfully. And then they packed his clothes, and books, and so forth, with great care, and consigned them in due course to certain persons sent by Florence, in the evening, to fetch them. And then they took the last cup of tea in the lonely house. And so Dombey and Son, as I observed upon a certain sad occasion, apostrophe said Miss Tox, winding up a host of recollections, is indeed a daughter, Polly, after all. Apostrophe, and a good one. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Polly. You are right, apostrophe said Miss Tox, and it's a credit to you, Polly, that you were always her friend, when she was a little child. You were her friend long before I was, Polly, apostrophe said Miss Tox, and you're a good creature. Robin, apostrophe, Miss Tox addressed herself to a bullet-headed young man, who appeared to be in but indifferent circumstances, and in depressed spirits, and who was sitting in a remote corner. Rising, he disclosed to view the form and features of the grinder. Robin, apostrophe said Miss Tox, I have just observed to your mother, as you may have heard, that she is a good creature. And so she is, Miss, apostrophe quoth the grinder, with some feeling. Very well, Robin, apostrophe said Miss Tox, I am glad to hear you say so. Now, Robin, as I am going to give you a trial, at your urgent request, as my domestic, with a view to your restoration to respectability, I will take this impressive occasion of remarking, that I hope you will never forget that you have, and have always had, a good mother, and that you will endeavor so to conduct yourself, as to be a comfort to her. Apostrophe, upon my soul I will, miss, apostrophe returned the grinder. I have come through a good deal, and my intentions is now as straightforward, miss, as a cove's apostrophe, I must get you to break yourself of that word, Robin, if you please, apostrophe interposed Miss Tox, politely. If you please, miss, as a chap's apostrophe, thankee, Robin, no, apostrophe returned Miss Tox, I should prefer individual. Apostrophe, as a individuals, apostrophe said the grinder. Much better, apostrophe remarked Miss Tox, complacently, infinitely more expressive. Apostrophe, apostrophe, apostrophe can be, apostrophe pursued Rob. If I hadn't been, and got made a grinder on, miss and mother, which was a most unfortunate circumstance for a young co-individual. Apostrophe, very good indeed, apostrophe observed Miss Tox, approvingly. Apostrophe and if I hadn't been led away by birds, and then fallen into a bad service, apostrophe said the grinder, I hope I might have done better. But it's never too late for a apostrophe, indie apostrophe suggested Miss Tox. Apostrophe whittle, apostrophe said the grinder, to mend, and I hope to mend, miss, with your kind trial, and wishing, mother, my love to father, and brothers and sisters, and saying of it. Apostrophe, I am very glad indeed to hear it, apostrophe observed Miss Tox. Will you take a little bread and butter, and a cup of tea, before we go, Robin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, thankee, miss, apostrophe returned the grinder, who immediately began to use his own personal grinders in a most remarkable manner, as if he had been on very short allowance for a considerable period. Miss Tox, being, in good time, bonneted and shawled, and Polly too, Rob hugged his mother, and followed his new mistress away, so much to the hopeful admiration of Polly, that something in her eyes made luminous rings round the gas lamps as she looked after him. Polly then put out her light, locked the house door, delivered the key at an agent's hard by, and went home as fast as she could go, rejoicing in the shrill delight that her unexpected arrival would occasion there. The great house, dumb as to all that had been suffered in it, and the changes it had witnessed, stood frowning like a dark mute on the street, bulking any nearer inquiries with the staring announcement that the lease of this desirable family mansion was to be disposed of. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.